This is the Christina Cook Show podcast. I am, of course, Christina Cook. So glad you can join me. Tonight, what I want to do is I want to unpack the Trump phenomenon. I've alluded to this several times over the course of the past few months, you know, kind of sideways talking about Trump, but I haven't really delved into who he is, what's going on with the campaign, you know, all this kind of stuff. And there's been some interesting things, of course, that have been happening. Of course, he's taken a very, very strong stance against ISIS after the Paris attacks, which is warranted for a presidential candidate, I think. And I don't think that's untoward. I think that that is something that needs to be addressed. And he's done that. And I think he's done that in a way that resonates with the base and resonates with the American people. And, you know, of course, his we're going to build a wall, make Mexico pay for it comment, you know, and his strong stance against immigration. He's really resonated. And that's the word I keep coming back to. He really resonates with Republican voters and even some liberals and other people and a lot of the middle. And, you know, I mean, he's at the top of the polls. He is set up, according to the Fox News polls, he is at this point in time beating Hillary. He's beating Sanders. He's beating everybody. He's nearly double digits ahead of the next candidate in the Republican field in almost all of the polls. And I find that whole thing just absolutely fascinating. I really do. And when he entered the race, he really did not think that he had a chance. I didn't think there was any way that this campaign was going to pan out into anything that made any sense. I thought that he would play with it for a while, and then I thought he'd get tired of it, and then I thought he'd go away. And that's not what's happened. And so I started a conversation today, and the reason why I think that it's important to look at this, let's talk about that for a second, because I think it's really important for us to understand what exactly is going on here. Why is he polling so high? What are the lessons that we can pull out of this? I mean, regardless of whether or not you support Trump as a candidate, I know that there are people who listen to this podcast who like Trump, people who like Cruz, like me, people who like Rand Paul, and people who, you know, maybe don't support any of those. They like Carson or, you know, I mean, Fiorina. I know that there's a lot of course, we've got 14 candidates still in the race. So there's going to be a lot of people who have their candidate and they have their favorite and who they want to go for. So, you know, not everybody is a Trump supporter. But he really is resonating with the American people. And so no matter whose campaign you are on and whose side you're on, if you are involved in a campaign or if you're just, yeah, I like that guy or that girl, no matter who it is, I think it's important for us to understand what the mechanics are of what's going on here and why he is polling so well, why this has turned into such a phenomenon. And it is a phenomenon that you're seeing also on the left because of Bernie Sanders' rise and how that's going. He is not out polling Hillary, but he has a following that I never would have dreamed for a self-avowed socialist. That just doesn't happen in America, but he does. He does. And it's the same. I think it's the same phenomenon. I don't know Sanders supporters quite as well as I know Trump supporters. I actually know personally the state coordinator for the Trump campaign here in Colorado. It's Becky Mizell. You know, folks who are big supporters of him, folks who are big detractors of him, no matter which side of this debate you fall down on, no matter whether you support him or not, we've got to understand this. There is gold in the Trump campaign that needs to be mined, and it has to be looked at, and we have to understand what the political realities are that are going on behind this, okay? So that's what we're going to do on this podcast. That's what we're going to do. We're going to unpack the Trump campaign and talk about why he is resonating so greatly. First, though, because, I mean, we're really trying to solve the mystery of Trump. The reason it's a mystery is because I don't see him as a conservative. That is really kind of, that's one of the reasons why I support Cruz, because I think that he is a staunch conservative, constitutional conservative, somebody I can really get behind. But I approach politics as a political pundit. You know, I am one of those folks who sits and reads Breitbart first thing every morning. I click on all the links on Drudge. You know, I mean, this is my news. I watch Fox News when I'm not mad at Megyn Kelly. You know, this kind of thing is my life. And so I am approaching it from principles first. Who meets that? That's how I do my political decision-making process. Not everybody works it that way. And so for me, you're looking at trying to unpack the mystery that is Trump. We've got to start with why it's a mystery. Why shouldn't he be on top of the polls? To my mind, it's because I don't think he's a conservative. He's had past decisions that he started to get into the race and then he decided not to. Main reason why I thought that he would play with this and then get out. He decided to run, or he was going to run in 2012. He made noises for almost a year that he was going to run for president, and then decided in March of 2012 that he wasn't going to do that. So, you know, he's got that past decision, very, very public kind of no, I'm not going to do this. That's a strike against him. He's left the GOP at least three times since 2000. He left it in 1999 because he thought it was too crazy right. In 1999, he thought the GOP was too crazy right, and now he's a Republican. I think we as a party have, in general, moved further to the right. Either that, or I really am in an echo chamber. But I see people that I talk to, regardless of what the establishment is doing, let's not talk about that, and the political elite in the GOP, the base, they call it the base for a reason. This is the biggest part of the pyramid. The people who are the base of the Republican Party, I think, are much more conservative, much more hawkish, much more conservative than they were in 1999, pre-9/11, pre-2008 meltdown, pre-Tea Party, pre-all of that stuff. It was a moderate party at that point in time. He almost ran in 2012. We talked about that. He has made statements that make it sound like he supports single-payer health care, that he wants to get rid of Obamacare and replace it with single-payer. I've done some research on this today in preparation for this podcast, and he said in 2000 that he thought we needed universal health care. In 2015, what he's saying is that Scotland's single-payer health care system works for them. Canada's works for them. What he would do here in America, a little less clear, but he's making the right noises in terms of replace it with a free market system, erase the state lines so you can buy insurance from anywhere, you know, do the things that we conservatives want generally done with healthcare. But his policy on healthcare, Obamacare, arguably one of the single biggest domestic issues, is a bit unclear. And it's further clouded by statements that he made earlier. He wants a database for Muslims. Now, that's populist rhetoric to large degree. I get that. But that kind of anti-liberty sentiment should disqualify him 100% from being able to run for president, or at least on the GOP ticket, it should. But it plays to the fear. And so there are people who hear that and they go, yeah, it's a great idea. Until we realize we have a database for Muslims, okay, how about we have a database for gun owners? How about we have a database for anybody who's ever said anything bad about homosexuals on Facebook? How about we have those things? Databases in the hands of government, bad idea. They've already got way too much information on us. And when we tell them that, yes, this group needs to give up their liberty, there is nothing keeping them from coming and taking our liberty as well. Okay. The Islam, the problem of Islam, the problem of how we deal with all that, it's obviously a subject for another podcast. I've addressed it several times over the past few weeks, but that is, I think, an anti-liberty sentiment that I am not behind. Doing a database of Muslims in America, not a great idea. He's made donations to Democrats. He's made many donations to Democrats. In fact, he has donated more to Democrat candidates than he has to Republicans since 1990. He's given over $540,000 to Democrats, more than he gave to the Republicans, which is more than he gave to Republicans over the same period of time. That's kind of weird, especially if he's running as a Republican and he believes in Republican values. If you believe in pragmatism, if you believe in just making sure that your pockets are lined, then sure, go ahead and buy some Democrat candidates. But that is not exactly what we look for when we're looking for a presidential candidate. So I think that's a big strike against him. He supported Obama's campaign in 2008. He has abused eminent domain as a real estate developer. And some of this stuff is just bad, like the widow that he tried to take her house through eminent domain so he could build a limousine parking lot. That kind of stuff, not presidential. Misuse of government power, misuse of government power by a rich guy, to me, definite huge strike against him. He stated at one point in time that he wanted Oprah Winfrey on his ticket. Oh my gosh. Do I need to say anything else? Really? On that one? He's made noises now that he wants Cruz, but he has never really come down on any person, on any single person, except that he did say that he wanted Oprah. I mean, come on. This is ridiculous. So, those are all strikes against him. As a conservative, his bona fides are really weak. And they, especially when you compare him to others who are in the field, when you compare him to Cruz, when you compare him even to Rubio in large part, he's not there. You know, his bona fides are not there. But he's on top of the polls. He's on top of the polls. His rhetoric is resonating. Why? You know, what's going on here? Now, there are some very staunch conservatives, people I respect greatly, who really, really like him. And I think what I've established here is that there are a few reasons that they really like him. First, he's a hawk on immigration. He's a hawk on the Second Amendment. He's very much, you know, in supporting our military strength and our ability to be able to defend ourselves anywhere in the world. And from a conservative standpoint, if you're a conservative Republican, those things are very, very, very important. Probably outstrip most other issues. People see him as part of the solution. He's a guy who gets things done. I mean, look at his history in business. He's a guy who gets things done. Sure, he takes risks. Sometimes he fails. He has filed bankruptcy. But he is a guy who gets things done. He makes the deal happen. And people see him as a mover, you know, somebody who is going to move stuff, not just put up political words and talk about how things are going to happen. He makes them happen. That's big. That's huge, especially when we've got a state of Washington gridlock, when we've got a state of government that is not willing to take the necessary political steps in order to reduce itself, to get back in its constitutional box. If he were that guy, he's the guy who could get it done. Question, of course, is he that guy? And I don't know. But seeing him as part of the solution and not as part of the problem. He's a political outsider. He gets things done in spite of the politicians. That is hugely attractive, especially to the conservative liberty movement type base. I get that. I really do. And that is a very attractive quality about Donald Trump. And of course, the establishment hates him. And that puts him immediately 6 points up of everybody else. The establishment hates him. Anybody the establishment hates has got to be good, right? Isn't this how our reasoning goes? This, I think, is why the fact that he's a hawk on these things that are really, really important to conservatives. He sees himself as part of people see him as part of the solution, not part of the problem. And the establishment hating him, those are all things that's going to put him in the plus column for some conservative Republicans, some. But conservative Republicans, Tea Party people, people who listen to my podcast, we're not typical. We are not typical voters. There's a whole bunch of other people out there who don't give a rat's hind end about politics until it either bites them in the pocketbook, bites them some other way, or until the presidential election comes around and people are asking them who they're going to vote for. They don't give a second thought to politics until one of those three things happens, or all three. And if all three happen at the same time, then they start perking up and taking notice. But they don't have the background. They don't have the you know, deep delving into the principles and what all these issues mean and how all this stuff works. And that's the majority of our voters. That is the majority of the electorate. So, and if you're one of those people who actually listens to my podcast and you feel like you are in that group, thank you for being here. Thank you for being part of this conversation and for taking the initiative to learn more about our political process, because that is what we need to do, and that's what we need to replicate throughout our entire country. That everybody needs, I think, to up their civic engagement, become part of the solution. So the rest of Donald Trump's supporters, besides these staunch conservative Liberty Camp people who have decided to throw in with him instead of a Cruz, instead of a Carson, instead of Fiorina, you know, whoever else your candidate of choice is. Let's look at the demographics here. The rest of his supporters are a little bit older. They're mostly between the ages of, about half are between the ages of 45 and 64. They're a little less highly educated. About half of them have a high school education. Only 11%. No, sorry. About half happen to have a, try that again, have a high school education. And then there's some who have less than that, and there's some who have more. They're a little bit lower paid. Only 11% of Donald Trump supporters make over $100,000 a year. These are not country club Republicans, in other words. I'm trying to paint a picture for you of who these people are. These are not country club Republicans. These are not folks who attend fundraisers and often are not involved in the party until a candidate comes around that really gets them excited. And so that's who these folks are. What is resonating with them? And I put this question out on Facebook today to get people's take on what they thought was the key to Trump's popularity among this group. And a lot of it kind of boils down to, he says the things that people want to hear. He's a straight talker. He says the right words with the right tone, even if those words are contradictory to something that he had said a few weeks ago, even if he has changed his policy position, it seems like it doesn't matter in the polls. It doesn't matter to his supporters. He says the things that people want to hear. And he gives the impression that he is interested in the welfare of the citizens of the United States. He wants to care for us. He wants us to know that he hears the frustration. And I think that piece of it is key. He hears the frustration. He hears the anger. He echoes the anger right back at him. And that is what is resonating. That piece of it is part. It's only about half, I think. But that's a lot of what's resonating here. We're angry. We're frustrated. Finally, here's a candidate who's also angry and frustrated. And he's angry and frustrated for the right reasons. He's saying the right things. As you know, the immigration and blah, 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 blah. You know, it doesn't even matter. It's just that frustration and anger is being validated by him. Yes, you're angry. You have a right to be angry. Here's all the things that are wrong. That kind of validation is huge. That is a huge emotional motivator to people. You want to persuade somebody, helping them feel like they are, their emotions that they're feeling are absolutely valid. That's the first step to creating that bridge of communication. Acknowledging where they're at. Remember Clinton, I feel your pain. You know, it's the same thing. It is the exact same thing. It's a very charismatic thing to do when you're speaking to a group, when you're speaking to somebody individually. That validation of where they're at, hugely important. Trump takes it one step further. And he tells his supporters and the people of America, not only do I hear your frustration and pain, but I believe in your ability to overcome it. I believe in us as a nation. And that is a positive vision. And I think that you put those two pieces together, I think you've got a formula for something that makes a lot of sense. This is what happened with Reagan's campaign. This is what happened with Clinton's campaign. This is what happened with Obama's campaign. Understanding where these people are at and helping them see a brighter future, those are the key components to any presidential campaign, and indeed, I think any campaign, period. It's basic rhetorical tools. This is basic persuasion. I validate you. I'm with you. I want us to go to this brighter place. This, to me, is the appeal of Donald Trump. And the thing is, we haven't, especially us on the right, we haven't heard this in so long. We haven't heard it since Reagan. We haven't had this kind of validation, this, yes, you're right. No, PC is not the best way to go. No, we don't have to be politically correct. We can actually speak the truth. And that's the thing about Trump is he's so brutally honest. He's so authentic. In fact, he says these really stupid things, and all it does is add to his authenticity. All it does is make it obvious that he is speaking from the heart, that he is speaking his truth. Absolutely. 100%, and it makes him more authentic when he says stupid stuff. And his poll numbers, that's why his poll numbers are not impacted when he starts saying some of these things. People believe him. They believe that he's going to tell it to them straight. And if he's telling it to them straight and he's validating them, then that has a ring of truth to it. If he's telling it to them straight and he's saying, and we're going to go to this brighter place, people are willing to buy that. They're willing to buy into that vision because they believe him. They believe who he is. And since we haven't heard this since Reagan, since we haven't had this kind of validation, he really is a breath of fresh air. You hear that all the time in response to Donald Trump. He is a breath of fresh air, and a very legitimate one, actually. It's nice to hear these things, and it's nice to think that, yes, we do control our own destiny instead of being victims. Now, looking at this in depth is important, and I alluded to this earlier. I mean, Trump is really a once-in-a-lifetime candidate. This kind of candidate does not come around more than once, except for Perot. Okay, so we've gone down this path before. When Ross Perot was running in 1992, I was, oh gracious, how old was I? 23 years old. I was like the model of one of those young, politically recently activated people who's like, oh my gosh, a candidate I can get excited about. He's not a politician, he's a businessman. Sound familiar? He's a billionaire. Sound familiar? This is why I'm terrified of Trump running third party. I am absolutely terrified of him going outside the GOP and running third party because that will guarantee a Dem victory. Absolutely guarantee that Hillary Clinton gets into the White House. We can't have that happen. That's exactly what happened to get Bill Clinton into the White House. We do not want to see that happen. But Trump, in so many ways, in both in actual stature and in the amount of hair he has, and in so many other ways, is an even bigger candidate than Ross Perot ever was. And he's a larger than life guy. He's a once in a lifetime phenomenon. But these same voters who are supporting him now, they'll also vote in the 2020 election and in the 2024 election. And in the 2028 election. And they will also vote in all of the state elections and the municipal elections. These are the same voters. The voters who are reacting to Trump are the same voters that we are pursuing for all of these other races. It's absolutely vital that we dissect what is going on in this campaign and take away the gold that is there to apply. Because we have to understand this. We have to take it and apply it to these other races. This is how we win. This is how that vision of America that we talk about gets implemented. is applying this kind of communication, this kind of messaging, and understanding exactly how it works, breaking it down. I'm a formula person, and communication is an art. So it's not always this exact, but I think we've really hit on something here, and it's a basis of the building blocks for building a campaign for any level of government. These are the things that we need to understand. We really have to understand what it is that these folks are reacting to so strongly. And what they're reacting to are the emotions. Finally, I'm understood. Finally, somebody hears it. Finally, somebody gets it. And not just that, but it's somebody who's got a plan to get us out of it. And no matter what you think about how political messaging and political campaigns ought to be run, this is what's working. No matter how much you believe that everybody in the American electorate who walks into a voting booth has to have a rational decision-making process completely devoid of emotion, good luck with that. That's on another planet. That does not exist here. Our voters are people. And people make decisions based on emotion. It's the way the world works. Yes, actually, even you rational people make decisions based on emotion. You just have a very quick kick in of your rationalization so that it looks like you made it based on logic. But people, all people, make decisions based on emotion. Understanding that, accepting it as the reality that we have to work in, means that we can craft strategies that use that piece. And even if we're not talking about campaigns, we're talking about changing the culture. I mean, that's a lot of what we talk about on this show. Talking about changing the culture, how do you do that? Well, you do that by tapping into emotion. That's why the entertainment industry has been so successful at changing culture, at changing people's perceptions of things, because they tap into emotion. That's what entertainment is. It's a drama that makes you sad or makes you happy, it makes you laugh, it makes you cry, it makes you feel like you're in love. You know, I mean, that is 100%. That's what Hollywood is. It's an emotion-making machine. So understanding this mechanism is absolutely vital to everything that we need to do in our culture. Everything that we need to do. What's happening here with Trump is the same thing that we need to be applying. What's happening here with Trump is that he cares. And he's a very warm candidate. He's funny. He's charismatic. He's not polished. He seems like a real guy and a guy who really cares. And that's really that's so much of his appeal. And then further, he's got this optimistic outlook of we can do this. We can make this happen. Understanding those two steps, I think that's absolutely vital to what we need to do. So think about it. And think how this can apply in the political undertakings that you have, or the cultural undertakings, or if you're wanting to change how your kids' education is working, you know, or you want to change the culture at your kids' school, and, you know, understanding where people are, acknowledging that that's where they are, and then helping bring them along to something that's even better. That is the key. And Trump is employing it to brilliant effect. So can we. So why don't we? Instead of trashing Trump's supporters, instead of taking the stance that people who support him obviously are uneducated, blah, 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 which is what a lot of my Facebook friends have done. Of course, many of the other presidential campaigns have done the same thing. Brilliant, guys. Brilliant. Take one third of your supporters and completely alienate them by insulting them. Not the best strategy. You know, understanding and validating where people are You know, there may be a lot of touchy-feely crap on the left that I just kind of roll my eyes and think unicorns and glitter, but there are some good takeaways, and there's some research that's happened, you know, because of the left's focus on this touchy-feely crap that actually makes sense for us to understand. And we ought to. We really ought to. So let's do this. Let's do this. Let's take what we can out of the Trump campaign and the lessons that are there to be learned, and let's apply them. Let's win a few races. Let's win our country back. Let's win the presidency. Let's get some conservatives into office by understanding how to appeal. That we can do. So thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I am not going to do podcasts for the rest of the week, and I'm going to take some time off. I've got some things going on over the weekend. Seeing friends and family, of course, and it's just going to be a wonderful time. So take some time to be grateful. Take some time to be grateful for this country that we live in. It's the most amazing place on earth, the best idea ever. Take some time to be grateful for that, for your friends, your family, the bounty on your table. And remember, America is great because Americans are great. So go out there and be exceptional.